local is the last place where a Republican and a Democrat can sit in the same room and hammer out a good policy, I feel like, without that spotlight of the national level. And so really good things happen at the local level that we need to pay more attention to. We need to be building that bench the way that the other side has for many years.
Hello, this is the Great Battlefield Podcast. I'm Nathaniel G. Perlman. A great political battle is being fought right now between progressives and the forces of reaction on the other side. This show is about the political entrepreneurs and other progressive leaders who are finding new or improved ways to fight. My guest today, Cheyenne Davis Eubanks, is the executive director of the DMO, the Democratic Municipal Officials. Cheyenne spent the last decade building infrastructure within the Democratic Party. She previously worked at the State Party Advancement Network, and prior to that, she was the national director of the Best Practices Institute, the training department of the DNC and the ASDC. Before the DNC, Cheyenne worked her way up in a variety of roles at the State Democratic Party of Kansas. She knows a lot about how the Democratic Party operates. You should listen. So, after a quick word from my sponsor, my interview with Cheyenne of the DMO.
This episode is brought to you by Graphicacy. Graphicacy is an analytic design firm that can help you advance the mission of your organization using your own real data and information. They are 21st century visual communicators who create interactive graphics, motion graphics, and data visualizations. You can find Graphicacy at graphicacy.com. That is GRAPHICACY.com. With Graphicacy's help, you can visualize a better world.
Cheyenne, would you mind introducing yourself and giving me a quick biography?
Absolutely, yes. I am new to DMO, about 6 months in, but not new to the organization and the work. I started, as many of us do, as a field organizer back in the day, came up through the Kansas Democratic Party, served in many roles there, field data director, political director, voter protection director, and then went to the DNC for a number of years, served as the national training director there of the Best Practices Institute, the new training program under Tom Perez, and then helped run an organization that raises money specifically for state Democratic parties. So party work, party infrastructure building has always been in the blood, but coming to DMO is kind of like coming home. As the executive director, I'm really excited to lead this organization into a new era. But I have worked with them over the years in a number of capacities, even back when I was at the Kansas Democratic Party, working to elect local candidates there. And so always been affiliated with the organization and just really glad to be here to help run it now.
You've put together quite a career in this part of the political ecosystem.
Thank you. Yes. It's been a ride.
So you must have grown up in Kansas with all of that Kansas education and also state party. Tell me about where and what your family was like.
Sure. Well, my family was very apolitical growing up. It was not something we discussed at home. Now you would never know it. It's almost all we discuss at home. But back then, my parents, they grew up as Republicans, generations of Republicans. And so they told me, we're Republicans, you know, without really a whole lot of basis behind that. It was actually the death penalty issue that really just stuck with me. And I thought, how is this okay? Let's talk about this. That kind of led me down to an interest in politics. The more vocal I got, the more my parents started to kind of come around and realize too that, like a lot of states like mine, it is generational. You just are a Republican because that is what you have been. When you start thinking about the issues piece by piece, you start to realize that you actually don't agree with a lot of the platform, and certainly not now, the way that the party has shifted so far right. They eventually came around. They're very staunch Democrats at this point. And I came up in the field just trying to get involved wherever I could, internships, trying to get involved with clubs in college, and then eventually came out of college as a field organizer for a coordinated campaign. There's no better way to learn this type of work, right, than organizing in the field and talking to voters. So, and from there, it just kind of evolved. And very thrilled that I was able to bring the family with me.
Well, you know, the Republican Party of yesteryear, especially in states like Kansas and Nebraska, was very progressive, populist, very different than what has taken over that party. And the Democrats have moved in the opposite direction in a lot of ways. So it makes sense that there would be people who had old loyalties that took a while to shift. And we see that in every state.
Absolutely. Yeah. And Kansas is such a unique case. I think a lot of people forget that we used to be one of the most progressive states in the country. Of course, that was several political iterations ago, but we have come a long way, especially in the last, I would say, decade. Brownback and school funding issues really helped mobilize a lot of folks in our state. The infrastructure building that the party underwent, and I'm happy to have been a part of that. We built organizations at the local level. County parties were priority one. And we went from 20 organized county parties to, when I left 4 years later, we had about 80. We have way too many counties in Kansas, but we were on a path to really build infrastructure across the state and find those pockets of Democrats, mobilize them. Now we have made so many gains at the local level. So much work has been done in the legislative body. Obviously, we have a Democratic governor, our wonderful Laura Kelly. It was a lot of really tough grassroots work. And when you build it that way, though, it sticks around. It can't be cyclical. You know, the campaign can't come in, slash and burn, and see you next year. We have to do it all the time, all year round. And I think that's something Kansas learned the hard way and has really corrected. And so I moved back from DC a couple years ago, actually 2 years ago, and the party has changed so much. The landscape has changed. I'm comfortably in the blue dot of Lawrence, of course, but it's good to be home and it feels better than it did when I left, I would say.
Tell me in some more detail about the first time you went to work for the party. You mentioned that coordinated, but like, how did you move from job to job? What were you learning along the way? I think there are a lot of people, even people, very political people, are very unfamiliar with kind of the party as organization in a state and what its responsibilities are and how they're divided up and who does what. Help explain that a bit.
Absolutely. So, I mean, if you think about it, of course, the DNC is an umbrella organization. The DMO is one of the sister committees within that umbrella, the Democratic Municipal Officials that I run now. The state parties are represented by the Association of State Democratic Committees, which is the sister organization that represents the state parties. We have 57 states, territories, and then Democrats abroad represented as part of ASDC. The way that a county party interacts with a state party is akin to the way that a state party interacts with the ASDC and the DNC. The state parties are incredibly important because campaigns come and go, interest organizations, grassroots, ballot initiatives, all that comes and goes, but the party is a permanent infrastructure. And if it is not strong, it can't coalesce those resources to support good candidates, to support good work, good interests. I understand Gen Z below me doesn't like to ascribe to a party. I totally get that. The party, though, in the state does need to be strong in order to build what we want to build in terms of those interests moving forward. I don't think that you have to register to be a part of the Democratic Party if that is not your prerogative, but I do think the work of the party is still incredibly important. So when it comes to national resources, funding, those networks that we have at the national level, supporting the state party is always last on the list. I think it should be one of the top pieces of the list because it is the one-stop shop in a lot of states, and the states that are moving in that direction are seeing more success. The county parties are also a little overlooked. I really believe strongly in building a county infrastructure or local infrastructure. It's not, of course, called county in every state. Don't say that in Louisiana, right? It is one of those things that when a state party invests in building everywhere, It increases visibility. It increases candidate support. It moves the needle on electoral success. And you got to start somewhere. I think that really establishing a strong county infrastructure helps to build up the party. When I was an organizer, right, I was thinking about the candidates, but we did have a unique focus too on everybody on the coordinated campaign. So those House candidates, the local candidates, all the statewides, the gubernatorial. But we were also working very heavily with the local infrastructure there. And since that time, they've come such a long way. They have a permanent office. You know, I mean, these are things that you don't see in every county in every state. So those are the ways that I think that we build solid infrastructure. And that's what my vision of the party looks like, I guess, personally.
Talk me through a little bit those jobs in sequence with different titles at Kansas Democratic Party. You mentioned you were data director. You mentioned you were a regional director. Just say a word or two about each of them. Yeah.
Sure. Okay. So organizer, obviously talking to voters every day, making those calls. After that, I wanted to talk to the party about staying engaged in that infrastructure. And so they put me on as a regional field and political director. So I worked the 3rd Congressional District, which at that point was like that Kansas City metro area, plus Leavenworth County, which is one that gets overlooked sometimes, but has really grown in the last decade. The biggest pieces that I picked up there was that year-round component. So it wasn't focused on the election, which is a huge paradigm shift for somebody coming off a campaign, which we know that so many people come from the campaign sphere. Going into the party sphere, you have to think about no burning bridges, no relationships can be wasted in that space, because you need people showing up to the holiday party at the end of the year, coming to the bean feed, you know, engaged all throughout the year, odd even. And so my job was to build that county infrastructure, recruit people, train people on electoral work so those muscles didn't atrophy around campaigning. A lot of training involved there, a lot of data work, which I know that you're uniquely suited to talk about. I loved being a data director. I picked up a lot of skills in that transition from organizer to regional because I had to build something that lasted all year round. So we did a lot of data cleanup. We did a lot of standardization within our van. And then I think it was the training, the data piece that allowed me to kind of jump then to a statewide role to serve as field political and data director. State parties, in some cases, only have a handful of staff. So many, many hats for state party staff. Moving from that role, then trying to build an infrastructure ahead of 2016. So we were really, at the time, fighting Kris Kobach on the proof of citizenship requirements in the state, working really hard to register voters, which had become such a cumbersome process. And so education, training, teaching people how to do that work all year round, farmers markets, parades, all that good stuff, and door knocking. Devoted a lot of energy to voter registration as that year-round electoral component. And then election protection kind of came around as a fact that we had a problem with our voting rights in Kansas. We needed a solution, at least for the short term for the election. And so taking on that part of the work just became a passion. And we definitely sought to ensure that people weren't disenfranchised at the polls. It became more permanent that every cycle we would have election protection. One of the main things, honestly, that got the attention of the DNC in terms of my personal role was in 2017, our elections moved for the first time from the spring to the fall, our local elections, so county and municipal, school board, things like that. That gave us a lot more runway following a big general election to build and to recruit candidates, to train them, to run them for office. We recruited almost 700 candidates that year across the state. We trained them. I think it was 65% of them, 68%, I believe, ended up winning. The DNC took notice of that work and the DMO. So I worked with the DMO in that respect. And they noticed that training was a huge piece of the work that we were doing in Kansas. I had to train people because we didn't have enough capacity to have staff on the ground all year round. So we had to have people who were able to do the work themselves without me. And so came to the DNC to help build up the training infrastructure there. And it started with supporting the state parties, getting them the resources and information they needed. We also trained thousands and thousands of grassroots activists, candidates. It was a lot of work there. And I would say at the DNC is where I started to learn, too, that every state party is not the same. The thing that I did in Kansas doesn't work everywhere. But in a lot of ways, there are so many similarities. So don't reinvent the wheel. We can absolutely take those best practices and apply them across the country. And I think that was something that has really helped prepare me for this role. It's just the idea that we can find a solution and there's probably a good starting point already that's been built, right? So
there's the independent expenditure side in many states, and that varies quite a lot depending on the nature of the donors and the tables and just all of the organizations that inhabit that. How did you see that realm in Kansas? How strong or weak was that?
In Kansas, we do have a pretty strong soft side coalition, and that's something we're really thankful of. The party, though, has been able to match it in the electoral work that we've been doing for the last several cycles. I would say that it's important always to have both, right? I will say that the other side gets a lot more attention from donors. There just isn't a quick fix, though. The fix is building and building and building. And we don't always see that on the IE side, building from cycle to cycle. It's solution for this cycle, solution for this cycle. We need both sides. We just also need equal attention to both sides, I think, from the donor universe, because you're making campaigns including the IE side start from ground zero if we don't have an infrastructure already built there within the party side, I would say.
I would hazard a guess that you read the book, What's the Matter with Kansas? Did you?
It's been a long time. And sometimes I'm like, sometimes it still feels very real, but yes.
I think that people who follow national politics who don't know particular states are often surprised at how strongly a lot of states in that region of the country go Republican in national elections. And even though you have a Democratic governor, Kansas has leaned that way for a while. It's not my whole life, but for a while. How do you see Kansas developing ideologically? Are they more receptive to being a toss-up state down the line? How do you see it?
Right. Well, I do believe it'll be a while before we are at the national level. It's really funny, you know, as a data director, I used to encourage our legislative candidates and local candidates to talk to a much broader universe of voters than I would a statewide or congressional candidate, because you can really have a conversation with a voter here and connect with them on a lot of issues. When you localize them to the Kansas-specific issues, even very local to like water issues in your municipality or your county, you can find common ground with people very quickly. We are Midwest nice. That can be a double-edged sword, but people are often willing to have a conversation with people that disagree with them. So I always say start local in those conversations. The problem is the politicization at the national level, that will take so much more work here in Kansas to overcome. But when we get down to the state issues, people are very reasonable. They want to see good schools. They want health care. They want abortion access. You saw what happened in Kansas on August 2nd in 2022. These are very big issues for us as a state. And so when you take it down to that level, people are very reasonable.
I mean, Kansas, like every state, is full of good people of both parties, right? And I think it's hard sometimes for people on our side who are so polarized to get past how can you side with a Donald Trump, who we see as such a malefactor. Do you understand that connection?
I do. It's still, it still hurts. And I don't want to have conversations with those people most of the time. But I do, because I know that here in our state, there are bridges that can connect us. I have friends and family that I interact with at every wedding and every high school gathering, whatever it may be, that I have to have conversations like that. And at the end of the day, I know that there is some good in there. They're just not focusing on the right thing. Trump is to them some kind of, I don't know, it can't be hero, but it's some kind of celebrity factor. It becomes kind of a club. And to win down ballot, I feel like you still have to have those conversations, hard conversations with those voters. There are definitely trigger issues that we can't discuss with those type of folks here in Kansas. Like, I grew up, you know, shooting guns on Thanksgiving, shooting clay pigeon, you know, I know how to assemble a rifle, but I also don't believe that everybody should have easy access to it. I don't think I should be able to walk into a Walmart and purchase a rifle as somebody who hasn't been trained or received a license, right? Those are things that here in Kansas, we do see so many people stick to those specific issues and they apply them to the Republican Party and now Trump as that kind of moniker. And they will stay with that as the one thing at the national level forever. But I can get them to come to our side when we talk about state issues, when we talk about state candidates, local candidates. So it's not all for naught, but it is frustrating.
I did not know there was a state party advancement network.
Right, yes.
Do you know what's the story with that? When was it created? How successful was it? What was it like running that?
Yeah, it was, I mean, it's a fantastic table of folks who really, really care about building that permanent infrastructure. I was there for a short while, but it's one of those organizations that needed to exist. We didn't have a table that was focused specifically on state parties. More and more people are noticing that we truly do have to build there. And so SPAN really helps to provide that funding. If you think about it, state parties, as I mentioned, are always bottom of the barrel when it comes to funding. And in several states, they use it as just the holdover between campaigns. But if you really invest there and you invest all year round, there's a really positive impact. We look at states like Michigan, who have organized all year round. They have permanent organizing infrastructure there, staff on the ground all the time. And I mean, they won a trifecta last cycle. So there are very real positive impacts. I was glad to be a part of that for a couple of years, helping to drive resources to the states who oftentimes are in desperate need of them.
You made an aside early on in this conversation about it's been a tough year, which I took to mean a tough fundraising year. I could have gotten that wrong. But I've been hearing that from various people, and I've seen layoffs among good organizations on our side. What have you observed in terms of how are our donors mobilizing for what is a really pivotal year?
I feel like a lot of donors, a lot of organizations like mine, who we have elections odd, even spring, fall, all the time. So we really need to be built and ready to go all the time. Donors do look at it oftentimes as a cyclical give, or an even year requires a lot more funding than an odd year. So 2023 was a tough one, I think, for a lot of organizations like mine that are not focused specifically on 2024. We had elections last year. We have elections in 2025. There's a lot of factors in those decisions. The economy, of course, and the stock market, of course, for major donors and for organizations that are always engaged in politics. They're looking at 2024 as they got to fight Trump. So that's where the money is going. But organizations like mine, like the state parties, our partners in the space and allies, they're building a bench. They're building for the future. We're always looking 5-10 years down the road, not 5-10 months down the road, you know? And so sometimes I think there are a lot of really great individuals and organizations that give with that mindset of building for the future. But right now, with Trump closing in on that nomination, I think people are holding back and want to really make an impact in the presidential, which is going to be very important as well. It's just that we can't forget about making sure that this doesn't happen again by building a solid infrastructure locally, legislative, statewide, and beyond.
So I've talked to, along the way, executive directors of the Democratic Attorney Generals, the DGA, the DLCC, the Secretaries of State. There's a lot of them. You're the first person I've talked to from the DMO. It's a different organization in being embedded in the DNC, isn't it, than those other ones?
Well, I believe there's 13 total sister committees, cousin committees of the DNC. So you listed several of them there. DMO is one of the others. And so we have a local coalition with the county officials, our mayor's organization, which is very similar to ours. We support city council, mayor, and now school board is our newest membership category because there is no Democratic School Board Association within the party. So we are an affiliate in the same way, just not at the federal level. So there are a little bit of differences in how we interact with the DNC, but all in all, we are one of the sister committees.
Can you make an estimate about the number of elected officials that would come under your responsibility in this whole country?
The most of all of those.
That's what I was guessing.
Yeah, by far. Yes. And I hate to say it, we are the least resourced.
That's what I was going to ask. Like, so then, of course, you must be extremely well resourced for that.
Right. You would think. You would think. And it's just the fact that we have, because of the nature of, I mean, the breadth of what we reach in terms of candidates and elected officials, we are turning more into the candidate space for the first time as an organization. We are running program to support the electoral side. We have a PAC now. I mean, these are new developments with DMO. And DMO is one of the younger sister committees, too. So the resources that the federal level gets, that's, I mean, those are ingrained. These have been cycles in the making. This is new that we are working on the electoral side. And of course, that is the party's focus, right? Is not so much elected officials. Once they're elected, they're taken care of. We do focus on both sides of that. So we work on a lot of policy work. We work on a lot of good governance training and things like that. But now breaking into the campaign space, I'm hoping that opens up a lot more resources, a lot more doors for us as an organization. The fact that we're taking them from the campaign to office and supporting them in every respect there. So one other thing I will say is Democrats do control a majority of local seats across the country, and people don't realize that. So our membership is huge. Our other problem, though, as an organization, is that most people run nonpartisan for local office, for school board, for mayor. In bigger cities, that's not the case, of course, but we're talking about every city. As long as the individual personally identifies as a Democrat, that makes them a part of DMO. They don't have to be filed that way. And so a lot of people do think that is a confusing piece of our work. And of course, we have ways to check that, but it makes people think, well, that can't be that very many because I don't know a whole lot of cities that run partisan races at that level, right? But in fact, we do. We do work very hard for candidates across the country, regardless of their filing.
If I talk to someone at the DTRIP or the DLCC or something, you come to realize that a lot of what you can do has to come down to targeting, has to come down to deciding where to apply resources because you're limited. How do you do that? Do you try to be thin, like allow anyone to get a certain level of service, or do you look for races that are pivotal in different places? How do you guys think about that?
Excellent question. And the answer to both of those is yes. One, I am a former training director. If you ask anybody in the state party world, they will know that wherever I go, training goes too. And so we have built an on-demand training resource library that is available to any and all DMO. You do not have to be a target race. You don't have to be on the radar of your state or even your county, right? You can receive those training resources. We have the on-demand training resource library, our DMO leadership library, as well as a new training program that actually launched this year That is open to any of our members, any local elected officials. And we don't just save that for municipals, even. If you're a legislative, if you're a county, come on in. You know, I mean, this is really open to anyone.
What would someone find in that library?
It's a quite a long list, but messaging best practices, policy templates, training on running your campaign, some van training, which I love, of course. I mean, it goes from candidate to elected official, covering everything in between. We do policy briefings. We work a lot with our partners in the labor space and in the party space, other allied organizations working to elect progressive candidates. We put together a lot of really strong resources and we divide them up into a number of folders. So depending on where you are in that line, you can kind of find the right materials. But it's well populated. It launched last summer. It was one of the first things I did as coming on as executive director, is establish this training resource library. So it runs the gambit in terms of resources. And luckily, we've built a really strong national and local coalition. So we're continuously populating it with good information.
How would a city council candidate in Boulder, Colorado, where I grew up, even know to look for that?
Right. Well, this is a first of its kind resource for this level of candidate or elected official. The biggest thing we're trying to do is ensure that our state parties are really folded in. I come from that world. A lot of friends there. We actually had a call with the Colorado Democratic Party yesterday to make sure that those candidates will receive access to these materials.
So they have to be told by reaching out to their local party or their state party, and they might get a link to this or something.
Sure. But I will say we get a lot of them organically too. Folks just hearing about DMO, finding us on social, finding us online, and just taking advantage there. We are uniquely lucky to have a really strong alumni network as a committee. And so we have really started to leverage our alumni network to create what we're calling state ambassadors. So even if you're not currently elected or you're just somebody who really cares about this work, we're not turning people away. If you want to help local candidates or local electeds, we want to have you in the fold. So we're building a really strong coalition at the local level, but it does start with our partners at the state parties.
So that's the stuff that's available broadly. There may be other stuff. What of your resources can you target or do target?
Yes. So, and to answer your question about targeting, we have created a rubric of sorts. So it weights different categories because there are so many. I mean, at the end of the day, we can't sit and build an analysis on every race in the country. So we have to use this as kind of that starting point. It helps us qualitatively analyze the viability and the impact of this election. And so that is kind of where we start. We have a committee that reviews the candidates that come out of the rubric. A lot of things that we're looking for are things like, will this seat flip the city council? Do they have a major policy coming through next year that we need to combat, or vice versa, we need to pass? Will this be a historic mayoral? Will this flip the mayor's seat? School boards, is it a target of Moms for Liberty? If they are a target, then they are a target for us, right? And is this an up-and-coming person? Is this somebody that can really make an impact? This is the start of that pipeline. Those are some of the big things that we look at when targeting. And so it is hard because there can be races all over the country, and it makes it more difficult to decide. If we're putting a resource in a state right now, we don't have the funds yet to build in every state. So we do have to make state-based decisions or regional-based decisions. Deciding collectively on that is how we move to kind of the PAC portion, which would be direct candidate funding. Luckily, a little bit goes a long way in a local race. Limits are lower too. We can give in smaller amounts and still make a big impact, which means we can spread the wealth more easily as part of our organization. So making an impact in a lot of states is not as hard for somebody who wants to give to DMO because we can disperse it in that way. I will say though, it's difficult. We have so many folks. We just launched our brand new endorsement program earlier this year, and we already have seen a huge influx of people interested. To be considered for a DMO endorsement, general endorsement, you do receive a series of resources. You receive our logo and things like that. You receive access to training materials and special briefings. But to get to the PAC level, you have to meet those qualifiers that would have a ripple effect of sorts. That is when they would be considered for funding, is at that higher level.
How much staff do you have? What kind of budget?
Well, right now we have 5 staff. We are very much like a state party. We have a good number. We have a lot of people who are very helpful to us, our board members, you know, just allies. We have a lot of good relationships. I will say our team is uniquely ingrained in the national space, the ecosystem. And so we're able to lean on our partners a lot, which is really helpful. But yeah, I mean, I need a comms director. We need a digital director. We need a data director. As much as I love doing the data work, I don't have time for it anymore. And so we do need people to serve in those roles. So bit by bit, we're building that infrastructure there. But our budget, if you can believe it, in the past, it's been under $1 million a year, which we are really, really hoping to ramp that up. This program that I'm talking about, Local Victory Program, that tries to put direct staff support on the ground in the state parties in 2025, that's a $2.1 million program of its own. And it kicks off this year. We've already started it. We're going to keep moving as far as we can with the funding that we have until we can properly fund the work in 2025. I'm still very hopeful we'll be on track. We already are on track. But we are not the top priority funding-wise this year. We understand that. But we are trying to break new ground in the donor space to find those folks that are looking a little bit past 2024 right now or wanting to build that bench.
Is there a Republican analog to the DMO?
Yes. It has a funny name, though. What is it called? Man, I can't quite remember, but it has a name, as with many Republican things, that doesn't quite make sense. I think like city leaders or something like that.
Do you have a sense if they are similar in size or bigger or smaller?
I believe that they are similar size. Yeah. I don't know that their work spans the way that ours does. I think the focus for them is mostly maybe PAC work.
What should I have asked you that I have failed to?
I mean, this has been pretty good and comprehensive. I will say that DMO, we have a strong foundation built by the former leadership, and we're excited to be launching it into this next era on that strong footing. But I will say we have a long way to go to get to our goals. I mean, we are doing everything. We are stretching every single penny, every single bit of capacity that this mighty team of mine has, but there's so much more work to be done, and it is urgent. Local is the last place where a Republican and a Democrat can sit in the same room and hammer out a good policy, I feel like, without that spotlight of the national level. And so really good things happen at the local level that we need to pay more attention to. We need to be building that bench the way that the other side has for many years. We need to be focused on that as a party as well. I know that Chairman Harrison and my friends at the DNC also care about this work. We just need more people across the Democratic ecosystem, more of our allies, more of our donors, to recognize the importance of building that infrastructure at the local level and bringing up these candidates, bringing up these elected officials. Because they know how to do good work. They know how to work together. It's important. It's underfunded. We have a really great team of people and a really great coalition behind us that knows the importance of this work and knows how to do it well. Proven work, you know. So more support for the local level.
Are there other organizations that do focus on the local level that are outside the party structure that are good allies for you?
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's a ton of them. Organizations that not necessarily focus specifically on the local level, but may work legislatively or focus on specific candidates, specific constituency organizations. We're building a very broad coalition, though, on both the candidate side and the electoral space. So I would say it'd be hard to find an organization that replicates what we do. but there are a lot of good partners that we're able to lean on and we want to build up alongside.
What about you and your career? Where would you like to take yourself in the longer run? Would you run for office? Would you? That was a quick no. Why?
I like being the behind the scenes person. I think that that's where I would be a pain in the butt if I were a candidate, because I would have opinions on everything, right? You
know? That would be okay in a candidate, wouldn't it?
In terms of how to run the race, right? So that is not always the best. Someone who's speaking for themselves and without the broader look at the situation it's not always the easiest to work with, but you know, they are still strong candidates. I don't think running for office is for me, but I will say that I like to build wherever I go. And I don't have the next thing in mind, because DMO is somewhere that I've cared about a long time. I want to be here a long time. I want to build this very well. And I also believe in building up my side of the work. So building a pipeline of staff that can support this work and mentorship and things like that. So when it comes time for somebody to step into this role, I hope that I'm able to help make that an easy transition. I don't see that for quite a while, though. I'm excited to be here. I'm all in. This is a long-term thing for me, for sure.
Well, it's an honor to talk to you. Glad you're doing what you're doing. Anything else you want to say?
Thank you so much for having me. Check us out at nationaldmo.org. We are always looking for more support, always looking for people to get involved, whether that be as one of our state support state ambassadors, running for office. There's just a lot of different ways that we're excited to engage with our candidates across the country, our electeds across the country. Appreciate you giving me this platform to get that message out.
Good to have a chance to do it.
That was Cheyenne. She is at nationaldmo.org. This is Nathaniel G. Perlman with the Great Battlefield Podcast. You can find us at greatbattlefield.com or by searching for Great Battlefield in places where podcasts are found. The Great Battlefield is now part of the Democracy Group Podcast Network. Visit democracygroup.org to learn more about other podcasts that cover democracy and civic engagement. You can also help me by leaving comments and good ratings on Apple Podcasts or elsewhere, and by sending me suggestions for great guests to nperlman@gmail.com.